Welcome back to Creative Disturbance. Here is Yvonne Tinah calling from Texas. I have the pleasure to be with Marcus Neustetter in South Africa. Good morning, Marcus Neustetter.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So in this podcast, I would like to come in your space art related project. How did you come with this idea of collaborating with NADSA and, you know?
So my fascination has always been in what I call the vertical gaze and understanding where I exist in the now. Because looking up, we're looking back in time. Looking down beneath the Earth's surface, we're looking back in time. So there's me working with archaeologists and astronomers in both directions, trying to make sense of who I am in the now and what the now really is, because it's a very thin slither of time. So a lot of social projects that I'm doing have to do with the realities of the everyday. But when I escape to my studio or I stare into space, I have a time to reflect back on what I do as an artist. So that space is what really started to fascinate me. The space between the stars, the space between the archaeological finds, the space of imagination. So my quest creatively has been to try and experiment with that space in between, with experiment with the imaginary, but obviously do it in collaboration with scientists that already are asking the same questions, just from another point of view. An example is that I've been working in collaboration with my fellow artist Bronwyn Lace in a project in Sutherland, which is the small Karoo town in center of South Africa, in the middle of a desert, that hosts the Southern African Astronomical Observatory, which is about 14 international telescopes. It's a major scientific research center. But at the foot of this mountain is a community of disempowered people that I would say apartheid still kind of exists in that town. You know, it's just economically problematic and culturally problematic. And there's a lot of history issues there. And so millions are being pumped into the scientific side of it, but very little actually spills down into the town to make a difference to these communities. So as artists, we've taken the role of saying, how can we activate the space between the scientific and the community and see how we can make it more relevant to each other? For the last 8 years, that's what we've been doing. We've been going back there and systematically asking questions about the cultural heritage of the people, asking questions about the scientific development, and seeing how the two get together. I won't go much more into the project, but what that just illustrates is, as an artist, my two-sided approach to the realities of everyday, and then the need for a high scientific and art debate and advancement. The further and further the interest in space, and using space as this representation of a condition that we live on Earth, is how it's becoming the new space for colonies, the new colonized space. What is culture in outer space? What does it mean to dream about a space out there and to allow astronomers to dream of the space out there, but not infuse it with questions of ownership and cultural economy, I guess?
Now, it's interesting that you talk about colonialism and stuff, because I was wondering if there was any particular approach or question arising from an African perspective on astronomy and, you know.
Yes. The critical path is, at the end of the day, the international research centers build research units around the world, and they pump millions into that. That's supposed to go to building economies and opportunities for local infrastructure, etc., and they possibly do. But at the end of the day, it's to pursue scientific research that might benefit the world, but at the end of the day, still first and foremost benefit the knowledge systems and the needs of those that are in power. What happens is that the scientific research and programs that are in place are fantastic. The spin-off and direct impact on the ground to the people that are really have to deal with it are questionable. And you have the same with China moving into Africa. It's just a very crude example. You know, on the one hand, it's about building infrastructure, but what is the price that will be paid in the long run? Where is the collaboration that really happens? Or is it once again a new colonial power that's taking on a space that is in disrepair and needs to find itself first before it can start sharing itself with someone else. Mm-hmm. And so while we have great scientific resource centers in South Africa, and you know that Southern Africa won the Square Kilometer Array bid, so there's this massive radio telescope that's being built across Southern Africa. Really exciting. It's amazing. Millions being pumped in. At the end of the day, I do still ask the question of how that is going to directly translate. We know it's money invested, but at the same time, it's also a new, like the fracking of land in South Africa, and this is very controversial, but it's a raping once again of a place that has been through so many injustices. And we see that over and over again in so many countries. And I'm not saying that the SKA per se is doing that to us. I'm saying that the philosophical underpinning of how these mega projects service back the communities need to be questioned. And I know there are programs in place. I know they're trying really hard to do this. So it's not an accusation. It's more a thing we need to be aware of. So as an artist, how do I start my own space journeys? How do I ask my own questions about scientific research where I can maybe at least start to say that if we're looking into outer space, can we not use that as an analogy for the colonial issues that have happened on Earth, the learnings from our colonial situation, to see if we can't change that culture and outer space debate that's currently going on, to not look back later and say we're in the same position as we are on Earth.
And how does space project contribute to archaeology? And I see that most of your artistic projects are located in place where there have been some meteorite impact created. My first question is, what is the map of Africa in terms of, you know, meteorite impact?
Look, there's a lot of very important activity across the continent that's from a development of the world point of view. I mean, if you just look at the size of the continent by itself, the true size of the continent, not the one that's represented on most maps. If you look at its mass, its pure mass, its contribution to the world's potential raw infrastructure, the materials, raw materials, the et cetera, you know, the stuff that makes the world go round. It's a very, very important continent. However, it's being abused in various ways. But my interest in the meteorite impact craters, in the natural phenomena, is that that is something no one can steal from the continent. It belongs here. It happened here. Yeah. And so drawing attention to that is extremely important, because if you look at the timeline of the world and you look at how insignificant we are as human beings, if we can go back to that point and understand the commonality of all of us, and that we are fleeting moments in this place, you know, certain questions around difference start falling away. And especially coming again from my context of a post-apartheid South Africa and still dealing with many, many, many issues in this country of differences, maybe more so now than ever before, tribal differences, cultural differences, racial differences, gender differences, is when you start looking back into the origin of who was here and what was here, you know, you really start being humbled by that. And you start really asking the question of how pathetic some of our fights are in today's time, and how pathetic our moment in time is that we are on this planet. And so I enjoy immersing myself in those larger natural phenomenons, because what it does, it just diminishes the other debate that I'm having, which is so aggressive in terms of just defending that little bit of space that we need and that little bit of identity that we try to hold on to, and rather saying, wait a minute, there is a bigger picture, and we need to understand that bigger picture. And maybe if we all look back at that bigger picture, we can make sense of it. And I think Hollywood uses this all the time. You know, the moment there's a big meteorite coming towards Earth that's going to destroy us all, you know, we are united. There's a cold storm coming in, the whole world's going to freeze over. Suddenly we're all united and there are no more wars, and our missiles are used for other use. I mean, I know it's stereotypical Hollywood, but there must be some truth in that somewhere, because in some instances we actually do forget to think that way. In some instances, once there's a common denominator that we position ourselves against, and unfortunately those common denominators are usually people and other cultures, they are not understanding the bigger picture of our planet. And we are in a crisis. I mean, our planet, forget people, our planet is in a crisis. Our living conditions are being threatened from a natural resource point of view. And what do? We still continue to fight with each other about that little bit that we want to keep and protect. And we know why, because we are egocentric beings. And we need to protect that which is ours. But I find it fascinating when I end up standing inside a meteorite crater with a group of youngsters, and we start to throw glow sticks around and play with laser pointers and try to recreate what this meteorite must have looked like when it impacted Earth, you know, in a small scale. And we photograph it, we film it, and we laugh about it, and we're fascinated by it. That for one moment transcends all of that. And we say, wow, there was a cataclysmic effect that really created something. Some people call it the Big Bang. Others call it, religion. But there are creation theories that do put everything a bit into perspective.
Can you give us a clue of the spaces that have been shared by this extraterrestrial object, or any exciting place you've been working in?
There are two particular craters just close to Johannesburg. There's a meteorite crater called Friedefort, which is a 2-billion-year-old crater, a massive space that, you know, it's speculated that it created the gold reef. It's not true, but it's a great urban legend. It created the gold that today has given rise to Johannesburg. So without the impacts of the meteorite, we wouldn't have had gold. Literally, we wouldn't have Johannesburg, which is my link to it. And then the other one, which is a small little crater north of Johannesburg called Swang Meteorite Crater. It's only about, if I'm not mistaken, 20,000 years old. So it's a young crater, very young, and it's kind of very small in diameter. And it was used as a salt pan for many years. And it's one of those very spiritual places that a lot of spiritual people go to celebrate, to commemorate, to do things. So I've spent a lot of time in both of those places trying to make sense of what it means philosophically, culturally, and I guess scientifically in what these spaces are. And then I'm fascinated in volcanoes, so everything from Kilimanjaro to a volcano outside Sutherland called Salpetercop to a volcano that's actually used to be there, but has just disappeared somehow north of Johannesburg called Pilanesberg. There's this kind of changing landscape that we see around ourselves that, you know, obviously in our lifetime isn't really changing much, but if you zoom out, is incredibly diverse in its shifting of the geological spaces around. And it makes you think.
Okay, I know that you also spent some time in the Karoo Desert this past month or days.
Yes.
What was your project over there?
So Bronwyn Leth and I, for the last month, actually spent time in the Karoo, kind of continuing with our project called Southern Reflections, where we're basically working with the observatory and the communities, looking at opportunities for linking the two. We've built Sutherland domes, which is like naked eye telescope structures to get the community of Sutherland to claim ownership of some space. We've developed a resource book and film for educational purposes with a group called Africa Meets Africa that develops these educational resources that talks about how art, archaeology, and astronomy can help understand more about our own identity, etc. And it's quite a nice film. So what this last month was about, it was about going to three small towns, Sutherland, Williston, and Fraserburg, each of about 3,000 people, and going there and working with the youth around questioning how their context can be transformed. Because for the pursuit of scientific research and in the context of these farmlands of the Karoo Desert, you know, sheep farming, goat farming, etc., it's a very desolate and quiet and isolated space, and it breeds a lot of problematics, especially in the post-apartheid South Africa, where a lot of the problems, social ills, come from the Group Areas Act of apartheid system. And, you know, we have, for example, one in every five children in these areas suffering from fetal alcohol syndrome. And the fetal alcohol syndrome comes from a DOPS system, which is basically a system that the apartheid government and the farmers introduced in making people dependent on the farmers. So that, and then the farmers basically paying the people in alcohol. You know, quite a problematic history. And obviously today we see the repercussions of that. So our work in those areas is about trying to get to the history before that, to understand that a lot of the people that occupy these spaces actually relate back to the Khoisan culture, to the Bushmen, so to speak, who was the original inhabitants. And most interestingly, that through archaeology and astronomy and art, people start to let go of the fears of apartheid and the fears of the other, and start to acknowledge a little bit more some of their own cultural heritage and their own acknowledgement of the forced removals, of taking on the Afrikaner's surname, of taking on the Afrikaner's religion and language, and actually realizing that they have something to be proud of that goes way beyond an ancestry that is much more relevant now than ever before in trying to make sense of their own identity. Because one does have to ask, in a place that is quiet and silent and dark for scientific pursuit and research, how do you imagine communities being developed and grown? So what does development of small towns look like if you have to maintain darkness and silence? And what kind of impact does it have on you if you live in a place that has no infrastructure because of darkness and silence, and money isn't really being spent and supported because local government isn't coming to the party to deliver on certain things? What does it mean? That means you move away. It means that you just keep feeding this urban center's decay by moving there and trying to make fortune for yourself. And that is where we have a lot of problematics in some of the larger cities, because they're just being fed by those that are basically trying to survive, but at the end of the day, look for trouble in the wrong places. And so we are going back to the source and saying, as artists and researchers in that sense, how can we use creative practice to draw attention to these things? How can we instill some sense of pride and ownership in the place that people live in? And how can we do that in collaboration with the sciences, in collaboration with government? And I mean, it's a large, almost impossible task. But Bronwyn and I are really enjoying the challenge, and we're getting great rewards out of seeing the progression and the growth of a lot of partners that we've got in these towns. And so the last month was about establishing the next step forward for the project, hopefully for the next 3 years. And we're working with the observatory and other partners on doing that.
Okay, thank you very much, Marcus Neustädter. I'm hoping that we are contributing to shed a light on this kind of project and initiatives. Thank you very much for being with us on Virtual Africa.
And thank you for listening to my stories. And I gladly hand out my email address to anyone that's listening that might be interested in knowing more or getting in contact. Feel free to pass it on.
Okay, so looking forward to see you. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.